The industrialized North and the rapidly industrializing South are at odds over who should bear the burden of emissions curbs. Resolving that conflict is widely seen as a key to progress in climate change negotiations. The problem, says Annie Petzonk of the nonprofit Environmental Defense Fund, is that each side is waiting for the other to act.
Industrialized countries say, well, we're not going to cap our emissions until major emitting developing countries agree to follow suit. And developing countries say, we're not going to do this because we didn't cause most of this problem in the first place.
According to Petzonk, this week's G8 summit of the largest industrialized nations managed to bring those countries one step closer to agreement.
They are committing collectively to reduce industrialized countries' emissions 80% by 2050. That's a lot, but 2050 is far away. Developing countries have said you need to do much more. The G8 said, in addition, well, we all need together to reduce our emissions as a world 50% by 2050. The developing countries have not embraced that yet.
Petzonk says the tremendous economic growth in some of the largest developing countries makes their participation in a new climate pact essential.
We're now at a point where if we don't get action from both the industrialized countries and the major developing country emitters, it will not be possible to avert more than 2 degrees of warming, the level that many, many scientists have signified would be dangerous.
While government leaders continue to argue about how developing countries should be incorporated into the UN's climate treaty, Shoibal Chakravarti of the Princeton Environmental Institute thinks their focus should be on one glaring fact.
10% of the world actually produces 50% of the world's emissions.
Chakravarti and his colleagues have published a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that puts the burden for emission curbs on those polluters who emit the most, regardless of where they live. The Princeton researcher explains how the method translates global goals into national goals.
If, for example, in 2030 you want the world's emissions to reduce from 42 to 30 billion tons, that's equivalent to saying that nobody should be emitting more than 10.8 or 11 tons of carbon dioxide per year. What we do is we take that number and come up with the target for different countries, dependent solely on the number of people in that country who are above this figure, in this case 10.8 tons of CO2 per year.
Chakravarti says that in addition to providing a more equitable way of assigning responsibility for emission targets, this method could be used to fairly adjust developing nations' responsibilities over time.
Some developing countries like India, China, Brazil would grow at a much faster rate. So they would have a much larger number of these high emitters 20 years from now. This provides an automatic mechanism for distributing the work of emissions reductions among countries as they get richer and as they have more of a capacity to handle emissions reductions.
Most current proposals for setting emissions targets are based instead on the average emissions per capita of each country. Chakravarti claims this gives an unfair advantage to those who produce a lot of carbon dioxide but live in poor countries.
For example, if you take some countries, the average emissions could be very low, but you could still have a significant minority of very high emitters. And in equal per capita, some of these people would get a free pass because the emissions would be based on just the average emissions of that country.
Chakravarti's emissions reduction model has its critics. Michel Den Elzen of the Netherlands Environmental Assessment Agency points to one concern.
The main problem I have with this type of approach is that it's more data intensive than the usual approaches.
Aubrey Meyer of the Global Commons Institute has a different concern.
It's an attempt to come at it from the political end, not from the scientific or the logical end.
Meyer suggests that the Princeton researchers' method may not take into account overall accumulation of carbon dioxide in an effective manner. Annie Petzonk argues that whatever the method, something needs to be done quickly.
The Earth is warming. We're seeing it happen now in our lifetime. 2009 is our best chance for us, for our children, for their children. If we let this chance slip, it will be very difficult to get as good a chance again.
World leaders will convene for the next round of climate talks this December in Copenhagen. Meredith Haig, VOA News, Washington.